Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Midwestern girl goes to New York City, and she reminds the protagonist, of course, she is not the protagonist, of everything he has left behind. He covets her innocence and also despises it. When she gives up and returns home, he is sad, but not surprised. A flick of your wrist. Midwestern girl stands alone at a house party. The protagonist smiles at her as if to say, "Cheer up," and "I notice subtle things." And this reminds the reader that the protagonist is secretly sensitive, no matter what terrible things he has done or will do. He and Midwestern girl never speak, and the story leaves her to sip her beer in a corner. In the living room, the protagonist punches his best friend. Will he turn out to be like his father? He ends the night hanging out with two strangers. They walk to the East River and throw rocks into the fathomless deep.
That's Gwen Kirby reading the story, Midwestern Girl is Tired of Appearing in Your Short Stories. It's from her debut short story collection, Blank Cassandra Saw. I'll let you fill in the blank. A hint, it follows Bull a lot of the time. The book is my fellow Canadian Margaret Atwood meets Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It features very funny stories about women who cannot take it anymore, and rightfully so. These women cover a wide swath of history, from ancient Greece to today. One of my favorite things about the book is Gwen's willingness to take creative risks and push the envelope so far that all that's left are itsy-bitsy tattered remnants of the envelope. Take, for instance, her piece that we just heard. Midwestern Girl is Tired of Appearing in Your Short Stories.
A few things inspired me to write that story. At the time, I was reading the slush pile for the Cincinnati Review, which is basically the term for the huge pile of submissions that any literary magazine gets at a given time. And so I was reading hundreds and hundreds of stories back to back to back, and I was noticing a lot of stories in which women characters would show up. They wouldn't really be named. They would say something helpful to the male protagonist, and then they would kind of saunter off stage. And sort of while I was doing that, I went to a reading, and this man was reading a short story, and there was a character in it that he just called Midwestern Girl, and he never named her. And I just thought, I don't know, what a great name for like a superhero or something, Midwestern Girl.
Yeah.
And so I started writing these little vignettes where she sort of was sentient, if you will, and over the course of the story, she kind of takes over the narrative for herself.
Yeah, I love the way, it's such a brilliant story, and I love the way she starts, yeah, taking control of the narrative, as you said, that is very effective. So is it fair to say that this story is a critique of male authors who create underdeveloped female characters?
Yeah, I think that's fair. For me, it was just about sort of writing the characters that maybe I wish that I had read more of growing up, or the characters perhaps that I was still reading in books that I wanted to see more of.
Mm-hmm. A lot of your stories in this collection feature historical women, like the book's title character, Cassandra, who was Apollo's Trojan priestess in Greek mythology. You also have a woman named Gwen, who was the first woman hanged for witchcraft in Wales. Why did you want to write about real women from the past?
Well, I've always loved history. In my free time, I'm always listening to like history podcasts and all of those things. And I find it so exciting to learn about women from the past who sort of don't fit the mold of historical women that I learned kind of in school. I feel like when I was in school, women, you know, were like sewing flags, or maybe they were married to a more famous and interesting man. But they were pretty rarely, I mean, I guess a little bit like the Midwestern Girl character, they were pretty rarely front and center. And so when I would learn their stories now, like, you know, Boudica and the witch and all of these women, I just thought, how amazing, how cool to take a risk and have the chance to bring their voices to readers who might then, you know, if I'm lucky, look them up online and learn a little bit something about how radical women really have always been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have a favorite historical woman story in the book?
Oh, gosh, that's very hard to choose. Probably the first woman hanged for witchcraft in Wales. That story has a very soft place in my heart because it does what I enjoy doing with history, which is to say, in that story, I get to change history. Unsurprisingly, the first woman hanged for witchcraft in Wales died, as you would. But you know, one of the things I always found so weird about witch trials was, like, if you were a witch, how were a bunch of, like, lame villagers in the 1500s going to kill you? You would just use your magic. So I wanted to write a story where, you know, the villagers had actually got their hands on a witch. And so, of course, when they go to hang her, she can free herself. And that felt like a wonderful tribute to a very, very long ago Gwen who was not that lucky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well said. You've said that your writing has become angrier as it has become more honest. Can you talk about how this increasing anger and honesty informs the characters and stories in your book?
Yeah, I think a lot of people today are angry. I feel like that's an emotion that is really widespread as it is. And as a woman, you know, you're not really supposed to be angry. The label angry feminist is a very quick way to have your point of view discounted. But I just felt dishonest writing about the experience of women without writing about the ways in which, yes, of course, we're angry. So, for example, a story in the collection, A Few Normal Things That Happen a Lot, is about these sort of daily indignities that women go through. And I think, I mean, every single one in that story is something that has happened to me personally. So being harassed at a bus stop, being stalked around a grocery store, being groped, those are all things that have happened to me. And so the kind of catharsis of the story is that, you know, when that happens to these women, they use their superpowers to kick some ass. The anger in the story is very, very real, even if the sort of imaginative world that I create to process that anger is more fabulous.
Mm-hmm. I love that story. It's one of my favorites, especially as you were saying about how you escalated it and take it to this kind of super heroic, surreal level.
A woman walks down the street and a man tells her to smile. When she smiles, she reveals a mouthful of fangs. She bites off the man's hand, cracks the bones, and spits them out, and accidentally swallows his wedding ring, which gives her indigestion. A woman waits for the bus, and a man stands too close to her. He puts his hand on her ass with no idea that she is the first successful subject of a top-secret science experiment. She turns and points her laser eyes at him and transforms him into bus fare, $2.75 in cool coins.
Did you know from the get-go, like as before you started writing the story, that it was going to escalate this way and go into this kind of surreal direction?
Well, I knew it was going to be surreal. So the story sort of started as more of just a cathartic writing exercise. It was the day of the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, and I was very angry. And so I just started writing these little paragraphs that were more for me than anything else, just wanting to kind of relive those memories, but let them be ones in which I won. But as I kept working on the story and those characters started to reappear, I started to really think, like, what does it mean for these women to have to resort to violence? And how does that hurt them? Because I think there's a real kind of anger and joy and catharsis to the story, but I hope there's also a pretty profound sadness to the story, which is that these women, by the end, you know, the fangs in their mouth make their gums bleed, and the ladies who came up with the radioactive cockroaches are covered in scars from all the different times they've tried and failed to kind of defend themselves from men, essentially.
You mentioned that part of the inspiration for the story is that the misbehavior, the kind of misbehaviors you suffered at the hands of men. So I'm wondering, as you wrote the story, was it difficult, or what was it? I imagine it was kind of like, was it difficult? Did you have flashbacks to that, or were you kind of focused on, you know, the empowering nature of kind of the women's revenge, for lack of a better term?
Well, I think the strange thing is that because those things are not uncommon for me and for most women, I don't really experience them as flashbacks. I think that you compartmentalize them as being okay. You're okay. It was never that bad. It's okay. And that way the memories of it don't hurt you to a certain extent. So no, it didn't kind of trigger me, if we want to put it that way. And it's been funny talking about that story with other women because, one, those experiences are really universal, and two, mostly we all laugh about them. It's so clear that laughter is kind of our coping mechanism, and that in the book itself, clearly I, as a writer, use laughter and humor as a coping mechanism.
I love the way you experiment with story form and structure in stories like Jerry's Crab Shack, One Star, which is written as a Yelp review. And you also give us some great home repair advice in How to Retile Your Bathroom in 6 Easy Steps. What inspired these two stories?
Well, the How to Retile Your Bathroom story was kind of serendipity, just in that I knew I wanted to write a story about this woman who was about to get divorced. She's kind of just been broken up with by her husband. And I really enjoy writing stories where characters' emotions get to come out in like a physical action. And I think that you can see that throughout the book. I mean, the women are, they're fighting with swords, or they're prostitutes, or they're whatever it is. I think it's a very physical book. And so I wanted this woman to just take out her anger about this by just retiling her bathroom and having it go terribly wrong. I do not know anything about retiling a bathroom. I have never retiled anything in my whole life. And so, of course, I did just what this woman would do. And I went to the WikiHow article on how to retile your bathroom in 6 easy steps. And once I was reading that article, I thought, this would be a great form for the story. It'll give a physical step-by-step frame to the story while letting a lot of tangents take place during the story. Because it's an incredibly interior story. Not a lot happens, quote-unquote, even as it's so physical. So that just really came from my own ignorance of bathroom retiling. Jerry's Crab Shack, One Star, I think came very much out of my fascination with reviews and how amazingly personal some people's reviews are online. I mean, I love like when you're just trying to figure out like, will this restaurant be okay? And suddenly you're reading like the saga of someone's life, and like you know their children's names, and they're like, you know, this was just like the Christmas Eve when this happened, and that's why I'll never go to Bob's Burger Palace again. And you're like, so I love those places on the internet that are so public and yet so private and so personal. And I really kind of wanted to see if I could make something out of that form. And that's why I started playing with the Yelp review and how I met Greg, who I have such a soft spot for.
Yeah, because talk a bit about that without spoiling the story. If you can talk about just like what he goes through as he's writing the review.
Yeah, well, so Greg, you can see at the beginning of the story that Greg has become a Yelp member at about 10 p.m. and the review's posted at 2 a.m. And he just moved to Baltimore and he tries to take his wife out for this nice dinner. Pretty much everything goes wrong from the start. He hasn't really researched the restaurant appropriately. It's not what he expects it to be. And the review kind of begins to get off track, if you will, as it kind of becomes, rather than a review of Jerry's Crab Shack, it becomes kind of a review of his wife, himself, and his marriage. He kind of resists it. He's like, I would never review my wife. But if I were going to review my wife, here are a few things I would say. And so you could just kind of feel as his emotions kind of carry him away.
Since we're based here in America's Dairyland, I have to ask you about 3 Wisconsin references you make. The Milwaukee Brewers, the Wisconsin Dells, and Beloit. Is there any particular significance to these references?
Well, I went to undergrad at Carleton College in Minnesota. And so even though I'm a native San Diegan, I have spent a decent amount of time in Minnesota and in Wisconsin. And I have a very, very vivid memory of being, I think, 16, and my family and I were driving across Wisconsin. And we just stumbled across the Wisconsin Dells. We had never heard of them. We did not know what they were. And suddenly we were in like a mini golf mecca that just is dear to my heart. So I love the Midwest and I enjoy peppering it into my writing.
Gwen Kirby, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Gwen Kirby is the author of the short story collection, Blank Cassandra Saw. Fill in the blank with a word for something you don't want to step in. Well done. Find out more at WPR.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Lewis Black, Michael Schur, and Gwen Kirby. Beta is available to follow on Apple Podcasts or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Just search for Wisconsin Public Radio and Beta. And you can keep up with us during the week online at WPR.org/beta or on Twitter @WPRBeta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
You guys don't have any lame mandatory office hangouts, right?
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
I mean, what do you get somebody who wants to eat a unicorn?
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
Yo, you should listen to me. I came up with hundreds of plans in my life, and only one of them got me killed.